That's that. The we're up to the middle. We haven't done a Mesillas Yesharim for a while, so we'll concentrate on that tonight. We're up to still the middle of Perek Yud Halev. We still got a way to go to finish this. The next thing he discusses, again, he's discussing various averas and the branches and subtleties of them that a person has to take into consideration if he wants to be totally clean from these averas. That's the midah of nekius, not to be over the avera in its more gross way, but to even protect and stay away from the subtleties. So now he's going to speak about Chilul Hashem. Anfei Chilul Hashem. What are the branches of Chilul Hashem? Gam kein heim rabi mugdolin. Many important and varied ideas of what Chilul Hashem is. Let's read the paragraph first, then we'll go back and see what exactly Chilul Hashem is. Because a lot of times it's a very distorted vision of what is a Chilul Hashem, what's not a Chilul Hashem. The main idea over here in Chilul Hashem is that a person has to be very careful not to dishonor the Ribbono Shel Olam and to bring honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. ובכל מה שיעשה צורך שיסתכל ויסבונים מאוד שלא יצא משום מה שיוכל להיות חילול לכבוד שמיים חס ושלום. A person has to take in consideration in everything he does and think deeply that what he's doing should not bring to a chilul, a desecration of God's honor. The word chilul really means to make a vacuum, to make something take away to take away something that exists and make a empty space. Chalal is a dead body because he's missing his neshama, so he's basically a body with an empty space. Chalal Hashamayim is the modern word for empty space. A chalil is a flute because it's hollow. It's a hollow instrument. And I'm sure that the etymology of the word hollow itself comes from the word chalal. That could be, that's why there's two L's in hollow, because it's really the word chalal, especially if you're Russian. They say hollow. So the H is interchangeable many times with a CH. So in any case, that means to hollow something out. Chilul Shabbos means there's Kedusha Shabbos that pervades the world. If you're Mechalol Shabbos, basically what you're doing is taking that area where Shabbos exists and taking it away and making a vacuum. The truth is that's not exactly 100% the only meaning of chilul. The word chilul means to secularize, chol, to take something holy and to make it chol. That's also the chalel, to desecrate, to make it more, to secularize it, to take away the kedusha. But it also has that idea of making a vacuum. Wherever you have an appearance of kedusha, right, a saturation of kedusha, and you take it away, you're making a vacuum. Ukvar shoninu, and now he's going to give some examples. Echad shogeg ve'echad nezid b'chilul Hashem. Even though it doesn't mean that a person is punished equally for making a chilul Hashem b'shogeg, right, when he did it unintentionally, and where he did it intentionally. Obviously, there's more of a punishment for doing it intentionally, but doing it unintentionally is not an excuse. It doesn't make you completely exempt. I didn't mean it. I wouldn't think. No, you're supposed to think, since it's such an important thing, not to bring a disgrace to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, to Torah, right? You have to think before you act, and shouldn't even inadvertently do it. And if you do, you're going to be held responsible, not as much as if you did it on purpose, but you're going to be held responsible. You can't get away by saying, I didn't mean it, or I didn't think about it. So that's what it means. Echad shogeg ve'echad mezid b'chilul Hashem. The Omruzal, Hechidomi Chilul Hashem. Now, what are the examples of Chilul Hashem? Omar Rav, Kigon Anodish Hakilm the Bisra V'lo Yehiv Nidomi La'aljim. I buy on credit. Rav said, if I would buy on credit, that would be a Chilul Hashem. Because people would see me buying and not paying. And they wouldn't know that eventually I'm going to pay. So it could be that it, therefore in a case where everybody buys on credit and nobody ever pays any cash or whatever, so then there's nothing to suspect, maybe that wouldn't be a Chilul Hashem even for a great person. But talking where people normally pay and he has credit. And people may think that here this great rabbi is not paying. So that's a Chilul Hashem. We'll see in 1 second why. Rabbi, who is this? Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Kigon Anod, the Mazgina Dalar Amos, below Torah Tfilin. If I go 4 Amos without speaking Torah and having my Tfilin on, that's a Chilul Hashem. People expect that from me. And they bring down the Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein, brings down here in the bottom, Rabbi Cheskel Levenstein or Cheskel Sarna? It's Rabbi Cheskel Sarna, yeah? Yeah, Sarna. Cheskel Sarna, that even if you're not really that great, people make a mistake to think you are. You still is a Chilul Hashem. You have to act according to the expectations that people have of you. Otherwise, what's it called, if people expect that, and not doing that will make people think that, you see, it's not that important. We'll see, we'll get to the idea that that's called the Chilul Hashem. Okay. The Ha'enyan. Now he explains, why is all this a Chilul Hashem? He explains it one way, there are other ways. She called Adam l'fi madrigaso, l'fi mashehu nechsha be'enei ador. Every person, according to his actual level, or according to as people perceive him, even if he's really not like that. But that's how he appears to people. He's perceived like that. Sorech she's boning the bilti asos davar bilti hagun the ishkamoso. He has to be very careful not to do something that's improper for the stature of that person. Stature meaning Torah stature. Ki kafi rabos hashivuso v'chachmoso kein roi she yir bezihi raso b'divrei avodah v'tugubah. Because people expect that if you're on a higher level and you know more and whatever, right, you're a bigger tzaddik, that they expect that you act like that. And be more careful. You should act the way that you appear when it comes to Torah. The meinenu osa came, and if he doesn't do that, harishem shamai mischal bo chas v'shon. Then you're basically bringing dishonor to God's name, because you represent God, and people expect you to act in a certain way, and you're not acting in that way. So you as a representative of God are bringing dishonor to God. Ki kavod haTorah hu shemi shemar behalimud ba yirbe kmo kein biyoshev tikkun amidos. Right? What is kavod haTorah? That people who learn Torah should act in a way that brings honor to the Torah. But if you're a person who's associated with Torah and you act in a way that doesn't bring honor to Torah, so then you are bringing dishonor to the Torah. That's called the Chilul Hashem. Right? So if you don't act in a way that is straight and with good midos, and people expect that from somebody who represents the Torah, then obviously the Torah is not something that that deserves honor. The chol ma sheyechso mizeh lemisha mar bebelimud gorim bizoyim lelimud atzma. Right, you're causing a desecration, and you're insulting the learning, because people say, "Well, you see, somebody who learns, look how he acts." Since God and the Torah are synonymous, because the Torah is God's will, and that's what it means, Israel, the Oraisa, the Kutcha Brichu Chadu, Shinosamanu is Torah Swakdosha, the Tzivanu Lasog Balahasig Al Yodashle Musenu. Now he adds another knetch to this. The Torah is supposed to bring a person towards perfection. So if somebody has Torah and it doesn't bring him to perfection, he acts in a very imperfect way, then it casts aspersion on the Torah, that the Torah doesn't bring people to perfection. So we have two ideas over here. One is that a person who learns Torah, represents Torah, people expect him, since he represents Torah, they expect him to act in a very exemplary way. If he doesn't, so then, since he is associated with the Torah, it's not only it casts aspersion on him, casts aspersion on the Torah which he represents. That's called the Chilul Hashem. In addition, people expect the Torah to make a person more perfect. And if you see a person can be imperfect and still have Torah, that means the Torah doesn't do its job. Torah is not all that great. Because if the Torah is supposed to refine a person, and this person acts unrefined, and he has Torah, so then obviously the Torah can't achieve what it's supposed to achieve. So that degrades the Torah. So it degrades the Torah in two ways. One, by degrading the person who represents the Torah, and secondly, by giving the impression that Torah doesn't have the effect it's supposed to have on a person. Because you see, this person learned Torah and it doesn't have an effect on him. Those are two ideas in Chilul Hashem, but there are other ideas. That's not the only Chilul Hashem that there is. Chilul Hashem, where a person who represents the Torah acts in a way that is not befitting the Torah. That's what he mentions as Chilul Hashem, because that's the more subtle kind. Because there it really depends on how much a person could say, look, I'm not on that level, so why should people expect that from me? There you have to spend a lot of time thinking and knowing what's expected of you and where you're holding, and those are the subtleties of Chilul Hashem. What are the more obvious Chilul Hashem that applies to everybody, even not anybody special? So the Torah's Isser of Lo Sechalu Hashem Kodshi refers to the following situation. A goy comes and he puts a gun to your head and he says, eat treif. So the halach is like this. If there's not a minion of Jews around, right, then what's it called? Then you're allowed to eat the treif. According to some, you have to eat the treif. You're not allowed not to eat it, because otherwise you're committing suicide. The Rambam holds you're not allowed not to eat it, and if you get killed and don't eat it, you're basically a fool and considered a suicide. Because you should have, you should have eaten it. Others hold that if you want to make a Kiddush Hashem and show people that whatever, or sanctify God's name and say, I'm not going to eat this and I'm giving my life up for kashrus, which I don't have to, you're allowed to. The Ramah holds like that. Right? They say that the Rambam also would hold so if you're a special person and eating the treif would weaken the whole idea of Torah in other people's mind, and adarabba, not eating would strengthen it in people's mind, then even the Rambam would hold you're allowed to do it. You don't have to, but you're allowed to. So in any case, that's if there's nobody around, or not a minion of people around. But if the goy comes to you and he says, eat this treif or I'll blow your brains out, and there's a minion of Jews watching this, then you have to give your life. Because that's called a Chilul Hashem. Now, you don't have to be anybody special, right? Why is that a Chilul Hashem? Because, basically, it shows that, and it's talking in a case only where the goy does it because he wants you to be over the Issa. But if the goy does it because he wants you to eat it, I don't know, this is not a good case, but Shabbos, let's say Shabbos. But the goy says, cook me a steak on Shabbos. So, and there's 10 Jews around. Then it depends with the following. If the goy's intention is he wants a steak and he needs somebody to cook it, so he figured he's going to have this Jewish slave do it for him, then you're allowed to cook the steak, even if there's a minion around. It's not a Chilul Hashem. The goy is doing it not because he wants to show that he can that he can rule your life more than God can, and he can make you do something awesome. He's doing it because he wants a good steak. So that doesn't cast aspersions on the Torah at all, right? People know you're doing it because the guy wants a steak. But if the guy says, I don't want any steak, I'm going to throw this meat away immediately afterwards, I'm doing it because I want to show I can make a Jew do something awesome. So then doing an Isser in front of 10 Jews, right? Even though you have to give your life, right? If you do it, you're Mechal Shem Shemayim. You're showing that this guy can tell you to go against God's will, and you're going to do it, even though it's a pain of life. So therefore, you mechuyev to mirkadish shem shemayim and show, no, what God told me is more important than what this goy is trying to show, that the Torah is meaningless. I'm going to do it. That's why there's another case where you have to give up your life for anything, even a minig, if it's a shas hashmad, and even not in front of 10 people. Shas hashmad. Goyim make a decree that they want to obliterate Yiddishkeit. They want Jews to stop doing mitzvahs. So it's an overall decree. Then you have to give your life for everything. And you can't do something wrong. You don't have to do everything right. For instance, the Goyim said, we don't want Jews putting on tefillin. You don't have to go and put on tefillin. But if the goy said, we want Jews eating treif, and if we find a Jew eating kosher, right, you're not allowed to eat treif. And one of the reasons is because if we give in, when goyim will make that decree, then that'll be the end of the Torah. The goyim will make always decrees, and they know we'll give in, and there won't be a Torah anymore. So this way, it's not so easy for a goy to make a decree. Jews are going to have to give their life. They'll fight for it or whatever. They can't kill out everybody.
Would there be a distinction between deraisa and rabbanan?
Mistam, it's only deraisas that you have to give your life for. The one second. So that idea is, so therefore, this Chilul Hashem is different. This isn't that I represent, I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew who has to keep the Torah. And if I give in to a goy who wants to show that he can make me not keep the Torah, that's a Chilul Hashem. It's not because I cast it. It means that I'm showing that the Torah is not more important than what this goy wants to foist on me. Or in general, what goy you want to foist on you. Yeah.
Okay, not the case of the Shemad, but the case of in front of 10 people. Now, what happens if you... This is 10 people who all know the halacha, that this is not Yehoring Val Yavor, and therefore you're not doing something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you not to do.
Yeah, I said, but you're doing an Avera, Maisa.
No.
Right, no, it is a Maisa Avera, right? It's going against the Torah, except the same Torah that said that in certain situations you're allowed to do it, but here the Torah said that the impression it's going to give people, if it's an impression of 10 people, right, even though Me'ikar Adin, in a case where people don't know about it, or it's not a minion, I'm going to allow you to do it. Here I'm not allowing you to do it. So the Torah didn't allow you to do it. It's, you're going on the premise that Yehoreg Val Yavor Val Yehoreg applies across the board, and here you still have to Mekadosh Shem Shamayim. No, it doesn't apply over here. The Rabbanu Shlom said over here, I'm not giving you permission to eat the treif, because if I would give you permission to eat the treif, it would still bring about a negative feeling about Torah. So I'm not going to give you permission, you have to give your life. If you, in fact, ate the treif, right, and didn't give up your life, right, you're not going to be liable to get malchus or something for eating treif, because you did it under duress. But you were mechalel shem shamayim. Right? So God didn't say it's okay to do in this case. The same God said, in this case, you have to give up your life. It's not mutter. The question is, why didn't God say it's mutter, and that'll be solve the problem? No, because he knew that the impression given in front of a minion decreases the honor of Torah in the world. That's it. That's the idea. It tells people that what goyim want to tell me to do, or my physical life, is more important than mitzvahs. If it's not in front of 10 people, then the effect is not as great as saving your life. If it's in front of 10 people, the effect is greater than saving your life.
Why? Why 9 you do it and 10 you die? I mean,
Because because a minion of Jews, right, is already considered like a world. A minion is 10 is just like a million. And here it's something public. In other words, if it's private, up till 10 it's private. It's a private thing. Privately, right, you're not casting aspersions on the Torah by saving your life. So the Torah said, do it. Save your life. But if it's a public thing, public meaning, there's 10 Jews, that's called public ray. That's a tzibur.
Are you counted, right, as part of the 10?
I think so, yes. I'm not sure. I think so. And it's even, Shaila is, we learn it from the Maraglin. So it could be you don't even need tzaddikim. Even 10 Jews who are Rishoyim count for this. What? Women could be also count. That's no. For this, we learn a minion from this, and women don't count. So they don't create a tzibur. They're still like individuals.
Is it the other way around? Can you choose dates or whatever, even if it's fewer people?
That's what we said as a machlokus. That the Rambam holds that if the Torah said to do it and to save your life, and you volunteer to be killed, you're committing suicide. You're not allowed to volunteer.
All those stories in the Holocaust and stuff like that.
The Holocaust could be different because it could have been a Shas HaShmad, where the Goyim wanted to obliterate Yiddishkeit. Could be.
Is that Shmad?
What?
Is that Shmad?
Could be.
I mean, they wanted to kill Jews, whether, even if they would take on Catholicism.
Right. Okay. That's why many hold that the Holocaust wasn't the Shas HaShemad, and therefore you didn't have to give your life for other things. Some hold that it was. It could be that people who gave up their lives and didn't have to give up their lives, or put their lives in danger and didn't have to, halachically, if they would have asked, shouldn't have done it. But once they did it, right, and they did it with the kavanah of Shem Shemayim, and their opinions say you're allowed to do that, right, that for sure they have a din of Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. But that's only after the fact. That they asked the Shaila, maybe they wouldn't have done it. Not so simple. The question is a good question. It depends on what they gave their life up for also.
The Rav just said a moment ago that it could be even among non-form people from Amaratama. Going to the line of thought that I had before, so it's not even, it should be even worse among the non-form people, because they're making
even
a bigger impression.
I hear, could be.
People who understand.
Could be. I'm not sure if that's true, though. Even though we learn from the Meraglim, and they were pretty much Rishoyim at the time, because that's what's called Mitocha Eidah HaRoah HaZos. But it could be that we don't learn it from who they were. But because the truth is we do, because they have to be over bar mitzvah and males. But the fact that they were Rishoyim is not the point. I'm not 100% sure. There's a Minchas Chinuch who speaks about it. But I'm not 100% sure if it has to be. Because if that would be the case, then any minyan could be Mechalei Shabbos or whatever also, and we know that that's not necessarily the case. That a minyan can't be a people who are mumrim or whatever. I'm not 100% sure. I'm not clear with that.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so that's another kind of Chilul Hashem, where it's not dependent on the person who represents. So as a Jew, to give in to coercion publicly is a Chilul Hashem. Okay, then there's another kind of Chilul Hashem. One second. Now, what's the idea of this Chilul Hashem? So we said that either it brings disgrace to Hashem because the person represents God, or another thing is it'll bring people to transgress the Torah, because they'll say, well, if this guy can do that, I can do it too. Right? Now, it's not in the case of coercion. Somebody does something that's usher, okay? And according to his level, people would expect him to do it. So they say, hey, if this guy can do it, I can do it too. And therefore, what's it called? If he can get away without paying for the meat, I can do it too. And I won't pay either for my debts. So that's another reason why a Chilul Hashem means you're causing God's name to be desecrated by causing sins in the world, by being an example that people could learn from to do sins. That's another idea of Chilul Hashem. Another idea is, okay, that we said already, that people will see that the Torah, person who's learning Torah or whatever, it doesn't change him. He remains the same way. So the Torah obviously doesn't have such a great effect on people. So those are the ideas of Chilul Hashem. There's an interesting Shirei Das. It says like this. It says Chilul Hashem is the exception to Averas. Every Avera of what's it called, there's tshuva you can do while you're alive. Most of them. Like I said, you murdered somebody, and with Azim, so you get a death penalty. But Chilul Hashem, the only kapara is Yom Kippur doesn't help, and Yisurim don't help till the person dies. When the person dies, then if he did tshuva, and he had Yisurim, and Yom Kippur passed by, all the things together will bring a kapara. But in other words, the effect of the sin isn't erased completely until the person dies. Because since he created the Chilul Hashem, his presence in this world, right, is the Chilul Hashem. So only his leaving the world will take away that Chilul Hashem, will take away that vacuum. So it says that the Shari Tshuva, however, says there is a way to get kapara in this world by being mar b'kiddush Hashem. In other words, if the whole idea is take away the vacuum by you going out of the world, there's another way to take away the vacuum. Fill it up. So a person who's Mekadosh Shem Shemayim adds extra Kiddush Hashem, right, can give kapara for Chilul Hashem even in this world. Now, the Rabbi Yitzchok Blaser says that whatever works in the positive works even greater than whatever works for the negative works even greater 500 times for the positive. So he says, he explains with that the following. It says, O machdike harabim, a person who, the opposite of Chilul Hashem. If Chilul Hashem is to weaken Torah in people's eyes, then the opposite, matzdike harabim, people who influence people for the positive and strengthen their avodas Hashem, are the antithesis of a Chilul Hashem. That's called a Kiddush Hashem. So it says, matzdike harabim kikochavim la'olam v'ed. They are the people who influence other people and make a Kiddush Hashem in the world. Their reward is la'olam v'ed, for eternity. So he explains why. Why is that reward eternal and not in this world, it seems? He says, other mitzvahs a person get paid for in this world. But in Chilul Hashem, just like the Chilul Hashem is so great that there's no way of getting punished in this world which will take away the punishment from the next world. It's such a great sin that the only punishment can be in the spiritual world. Nothing in this world can make up for it. That's why until the person dies, he's not going to get kapara. There's nothing in this world that could compensate for it. That's how he learns. Memela, the opposite. A person who, what's it called, who's mekadesh shem shamayim, there is nothing in this world that could pay that person back. The only payment he could get is in Olam Haba, in an unlimited eternal world. The nothing in this finite world could possibly pay. Other mitzvahs, sometimes you get paid in this world. But this one, there's no payment. The currency doesn't exist to pay for Kiddush Hashem, just like the currency doesn't exist to pay for Chilul Hashem. That's what Rabbi Yisrael Blaser says. The Telzer Shiva, the Shirei Das, explains in the following way. He says, if a person has a small business, okay, he produces a certain product or whatever, he's not going to become a millionaire from that little business, okay, because the amount that he makes on any deal is relatively small. Who can become a millionaire, right? Somebody who mass produces. He has a factory and he produces thousands of items a day, so even if he makes a little profit on each one, it's multiplied by 1,000 times. So that person can really make a profit. It's like this. A person who does a mitzvah, and it's not a Chilul Hashem or a Kiddush Hashem, he's like an individual. So whatever he can make a profit or a loss is very limited. But the guy who's Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, so he makes an impression on the whole world. Or the guy's Mechal Shem Shamayim makes an impression on the whole world. It's a public thing. It's like a factory. So there, your effect is so great, there's no finite currency that can either reward or punish it. So that's the idea of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem. The idea is, are you causing other people to sin? Are you causing other people to think little of Torah, not to respect it as much? Are you causing other people to feel that it's not so terrible to do Averis? See, this guy can do it. Right? He can get away with it, so I can get away with it too. If you're decreasing the importance and the severity of Torah in people's eyes, then you're a Mechal Shem Shemayim. If you're increasing the honor and severity of Torah in people's eyes, then you're Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. So that also, each case fits that also. Right? By not giving your life and being over in Aveira publicly, even though it's a pain of death, you're showing that Lamaisa, this Goy, can rule against your Torah. And giving that Goy more credence than what the Rabban Shalom said. So therefore, the effect that it has is a public effect that makes it much more serious. That's called Chilul Hashem. Yeah.
Rob, does it help if we judge a person favorably and we say, if someone makes a Chilul Hashem, we say, okay, he's human, or for some reason he's doing Zavera, does it help not make a Chilul Hashem, or does it decrease it?
Yeah, it could be that like this, that if he did it inadvertently, so then the problem is what the effect was. So if people give him the benefit of the doubt and don't consider it, you know, then the effect isn't that great. But if a person did it intentionally, he's just lucky that other people gave him the benefit of the doubt, he's still going to be punished for the intention of what could have been Chilul Hashem. Because he basically could have caused a kichil Hashem. It's not his credit that somebody else gave him the benefit of the doubt. So he's still going to be punished for wantonly making that chilul Hashem. But if he didn't do it on purpose, then the only punishment is because of what the effect was. And if the effect is not that great, you've saved him from that punishment. So that's the concepts of chilul Hashem. Now, what isn't chilul Hashem? Some people say that, you know, doing a mitzvah can't be a chilul Hashem, right? Somebody who goes out, what's it called, an example, but it may not be a good example. Somebody who wears his tallis to shul, you know, in chutz laretz, and people make fun of him. So people say, it's a chilul Hashem. So many people say, that can't be a chilul Hashem. You're doing a mitzvah. A mitzvah can't be a chilul Hashem. But that's not really true. Because it depends how you do the mitzvah. In other words, if people look at you, right, and they make fun of you because you look crazy wearing this talis in a place where goyim are there, whatever, and they have no idea what it is, right? And it brings mockery to Yiddishkeit, even though you're not doing anything wrong, but the way you're doing it brings mockery. That's a chilul Hashem. But if what you're doing is 100% right, and people mock it because they don't like mitzvahs, right? Then what's it called? That's not a chilul Hashem. You're doing what you're supposed to be doing. But if you're doing it in a way that you're causing the mockery, right? You daven, right, and you make all these crazy motions or whatever, and even though you're doing it l'shem shamayim, but you're bringing ridicule to the Torah. So you could have done it in a way. That's what the Mishnah says. Kol shehi tiferes lo sel, you have to take in consideration how people see it. So if what you're doing isn't causing the people, they just don't like mitzvahs. So they're not making fun of you, they're making fun of the mitzvah. Then that can't be a chilul Hashem. That's their problem. But if it's not the mitzvah that they're making fun of, it's the way you're doing the mitzvah. And you could do it a different way that will not cause ridicule. And you don't have to do it in a way that causes ridicule. Then, Taka, that could be a mitzvah, could be a chilul Hashem too. The way you do the mitzvah could be a chilul Hashem. But if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, right? Somebody doesn't drive on Shabbos, so people make fun of him because he was walking to shul. That's absurd. That's not a chilul Hashem, right? You're not supposed to do something wrong because people don't like what you're doing right, right? If you're honest and don't cheat people and people make fun of you because of that and they call you a friar or whatever, that's not a chilul Hashem. But if you're shomer Shabbos in such a way that looks ridiculous. You could do it in a normal way, right? But you decide, instead of just walking to shul, right, you're going to jump to shul because maybe that's better, you know, so you think that's a better way of keeping Shabbos, but it brings ridicule, then that could be a chilul Hashem, even though you're doing a mitzvah. The way you do the mitzvah, if it's not necessary to do it like that, and the way you're doing it brings more ridicule, then even doing a mitzvah could be a chilul Hashem. But a mitzvah in its essence can't be a chilul Hashem. Doing the right thing can't be a chilul Hashem. Unless you're doing it in a way that it's not necessary to do the way you're doing, and the way you're doing it brings ridicule. Then it could be a chilul Hashem too. Okay,
only by
Yidden? No, you could have a chilul Hashem amongst Goyim too, and a kiddush Hashem by Goyim. The halacha of having to give your life is only by Yidden. But the Gemara says that what's it called, that you could be Michal Shem Shemaim, Mekadesh Shem Shemaim amongst Goyim also. Where's quite a few cases of Kiddush Hashem by Goyim or Chilul Hashem by Goyim? The Gemara says you give an Aveda back to a Goy, if not giving it back will cause a Chilul Hashem. Or if giving it back will cause a Kiddush Hashem, even though it's Goyim. So we are concerned of how Goyim look at the Torah too. It's not as serious as you have to give your life for it, but it's still a Kiddush Hashem or a Chilul Hashem. So what's it called? It says that Kihi Chochmaschem uBenaschem LeInei HaAmim. Torah is your wisdom in the eyes of the nations, that they should say Ein Chochem the Novan Kagoy Agod LaZeh. Who cares what the Goyim say? Obviously, the Rebbeinu Shlom does, because we represent God, and if Goyim respect us, then it's a Kiddush Hashem. And the Rabbanu Shlom is concerned how Goyim look at him too, because he created Goyim. Then the purpose is they should also recognize it as a God. So therefore there is an idea of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem even by Goyim. And however, it's not as serious that you have to give your life for it in front of Goyim. But there is such a thing even by Goyim, Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem.
Is there a Chilul Hashem to learn Gemara, like an Eged bus, because you're standing out?
So it depends. If you're just learning, people, what's it called, read on the bus, and you're reading, right? So Nistamba, that's not a Chilul Hashem, because you're doing a mitzvah, doesn't affect anybody. People don't like you learning Gemara, so that's their problem, that's your problem. On the other hand, if you're, it's a crowded bus, right, and you're sticking your Gemara into somebody's face so you can learn, chuckling away, whatever, and disturbing the whole place, then the learning Gemara is not the Chilul Hashem, but the way you're doing it is the Chilul Hashem, right? And my last plane trip, so there was before Lag BaOmer, there were people coming on, not on El Al, I was on US Airways or one of these, I don't remember, it was not El Al. A million from people. And one guy says he got his seat next to a woman. Well, that'd be a frum woman. And he said, no, I'm not sitting next to a woman, you have to change my place. They couldn't find him a seat. So in my mind, the guy was making Mamshech Chilul Hashem. The first, there's no Isser to sit in a plane next to a woman. Second of all, you buy a ticket, you know that, what's it called, you're not going to get, unless you go buy in first class, you can sit like wherever you want. But you know that it's like being on a bus or whatever, you don't have a choice. Right? To make such a big deal. Finally, they told him, mister, we're not going to force you to sit next to a woman, but if you can't, we don't have another seat for you, so if you don't want to sit over here, you can leave the plane. I want to say, yay, what's it called? That's what I would have said, right? You have your pedas or whatever, but you're holding back the whole plane, and that's a Chilul Hashem. And the woman was right. The woman said, I'm here comfortable here, whatever, I'm not moving somewhere else. There's no reason for me to have to move somewhere else. She could have been a tzaddikus and given up or whatever. She didn't have to be a tzaddikus. So there were people like, you know, what's it called? The way that they go about what they would like to be machmir on, but it causes other people discomfort, that could be a Chilul Hashem. Even though it would seem like, well, the guy's doing it, you know, the Shem Shemayim, whatever, it's still a Chilul Hashem.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why I rarely down with a minion on a plane, especially if it's not halal. Because inevitably, you're bothering people, keeping them up, they don't care what you're a minion. I don't know anything about it. All they see is these religious people who are very not nice and very inconsiderate. Right? People are trying to sleep. Right? As soon as they got on the plane, what's it called? The guy says, Mariv, whatever. The steward's saying, everybody sit down so we can take off. And you want to get up, Mariv, it's absurd. The people have to know that, you know, if they pay for public transportation, they don't control the public transportation. They have a certain schus. Beyond that, they can't make demands. So, it's I don't know, it's a certain mindset that I was embarrassed. I really wanted to get up and say something, but it would have been like crazy. Here's this frum guy, right, arguing with this other frum guy, so I just figured that'll be another Chilul Hashem, so I just kept my mouth shut. But when the guy came down and said, like, you know, mister, we respect your desire not to sit next to a woman, but we don't have another seat for you, so you're welcome to leave the plane. Right? I really like a drum roll of, you know.
What did he do?
He got his daughter to, I don't know, it was like a chess game. Finally, he decided he found somebody who'll sit next to this lady, and he'll sit next to, I don't remember what it was exactly, but when he was told that he could leave the plane, all of a sudden he found an answer.
What about dressed? Like, you see somebody walking through like a very hot climate, dressed with a sponge and the whole nine yards. It could be a cause for ridicule.
Yes and no. It could be that, like, if you're in a place where nobody understands that and you look like, you know, some kind of freak or whatever, but you hold it, that's the way you're supposed to dress, then what are people making fun of? Not you necessarily, but the dress that you wear. That's the mitzvah. But if you, I don't know, there's a fine line, right? In other words, doing a mitzvah, right? If I put on tefillin and somebody makes fun of the tefillin, right? They're not making fun of the way I put on the tefillin. They're putting on the tefillin altogether, right? When I was a bacher, and I was afraid to fly. So the first time I went to Cleveland, I went by Greyhound bus. 3 days on the bus, and I was the only white face on the bus, I think, except for the bus driver. And so when they went out for breakfast, I put on my tefillin and daven. And one day, I didn't make it to the end of davening before they came back on the bus. And come back in the bus, and this woman who looked like Aunt Jemima, what's it called, says, "Hey, a party hat." So that wasn't my fault. I wasn't like, you know, doing anything. I just was putting on tefillin, but she thought the tefillin was a party hat. So that's her problem, not my problem. But if I stood upside down with my tefillin on, you know, shuckling away, which I didn't have to do, and it drew attention in a way that made me look crazy, yeah, then yes. So could be just wearing what I consider, you know, the attire I have to wear, with a spodek or whatever, right? And they're just making fun of the attire. But I couldn't have done it a different way, and I'm doing what's right, then that's not a chilul Hashem. I don't have to not do a mitzvah or not fulfill a minig because of people don't like it. But if I can do it in a way that won't be ridiculed, and I choose to do it in a way that will be ridiculed, right? I can do it more quietly or whatever, and I decide to jump around with my spudder or whatever and show off, then maybe that is a chilul Hashem. Yeah. Davening in an airport, in my estimation today, nobody bats an eyelash at you. Because if you look what goes through that airport, right, putting a talus over your head or wearing tefillin will not draw any attention more than look around and see what's going on over there. Right, there are people dressed in these crazy costumes and with 15 earrings in their nose or whatever. But believe me, putting on tefillin is not more strange than that. Right, so used to go into a phone booth and hold up the phone. Right, I kept thinking to myself, if somebody answers me, this is going to be really, you know. But I don't do that anymore because it's not necessary.
I know spelled Shuva once, and he was sitting in the room, so he wanted to dub it, and he was embarrassed. So he was throwing his tefillin in front of everybody, so he went to the bathroom.
I went to the bathroom, but I was doing it.
What was that?
The bathroom.